You're listening to Food Integrity Now with Carol Gravet, Matt Spaeth, and Jeannie Smith, revealing the truth about the food we eat. Hello, and welcome to Food Integrity Now. I'm Carol Gravet, co-host of your show today. I also have with me here today my co-host, Jeannie Smith. Jeannie, welcome.
Hi, Carol. I'm glad to be here, and I'm excited about our interview today.
I'm excited about this show, too. On Food Integrity Now, we not only talk about issues that affect our global food supply, we also bring you integrity news. News and information on various topics that are affecting the quality of our lives. Our goal is to bring you this information in an uncensored and honest way so that you can use it to create change in both your life and in the lives of others. You can find us on the web at foodintegritynow.org. You can listen to all of our shows directly on our site or on iTunes. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. Please welcome our guest today, San Francisco Bay Area architect, Richard Gage, AIA, member of the American Institute of Architects and founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you, Jeannie. Thank you, Carol. Great to be here with you.
It's great to have you. So let's start out with talking about Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. How did it get started and what's its purpose?
Well, about 6 years ago, I was driving in my car and listening to one of the local radio stations, and I heard David Ray Griffin, an author of about 9 books now on 9/11. I was dumbfounded. I had not heard of any other alternative theory as to how these towers, the Twin Towers on 9/11, had come down. He was discussing all the evidence that we'll be reviewing today. I went to a local meeting that he was at and found, to my amazement, that there was a whole set of information we had not heard on the mainstream media that didn't make it into the official reports. And I researched this, found it to be true. And that caused me such great personal consternation that we could have been so lied to by government officials, by the media, that I knew I had to do something. So I did start Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth at that time, took the information to a few weeks later to my architecture firm that I had was working for. All of them thought I was nuts. About 15 of them came to the presentation, and all of them were convinced by the scientific forensic evidence that I presented there. They all signed my petition, except for one who was Middle Eastern and at the time quite concerned about his own well-being. So that launched the effort. We now have over 1,600 architects and engineers calling for a new investigation. Almost everyone who looks at this evidence ends up agreeing with us that, yes, these are controlled demolitions. And then, of course, they are left trying to make sense out of this information. What does it mean? What are the implications of these three World Trade Center skyscrapers being controlled demolitions? We can discuss that at the end of the hour.
So
today.
You mentioned three World Trade Center buildings. Most people think of the World Trade Center buildings as only two. And I know you speak about a Building 7. Many Americans don't even know about this building. Can you speak about that?
Indeed. I didn't know about it myself when I heard about this information. This is a 47-story skyscraper. about a football field in length away from the Twin Towers. And as a result of the collapse of the North Tower, it suffered a complete catastrophic collapse. It had a few fires in it, burning for about 4 hours. And these are not severe fires by standards of skyscraper fires. Yet, in the afternoon of 9/11, about 5:20, this skyscraper, steel frame skyscraper, in an unprecedented, because no skyscraper has ever collapsed due to fire, and there have been dozens and dozens of much hotter, larger, and longer lasting fires in these buildings. It starts suddenly, smoothly, and symmetrically, almost straight down into its own footprint, almost at free fall acceleration. This building drops as fast as you could drop a bowling ball off the side of it. And of course, the implications of that are that the core columns and the perimeter columns all had to be removed at once, within a tenth of a second of each other, on each of 8 floors and synchronistically timed floor by floor. Now, fire does not have that level of precision, so this is intuitive for most everyone. They get it. In fact, they say to themselves, I've seen this before. Yes, the old hotels in Las Vegas were destroyed like this. They drop symmetrically, smoothly, suddenly, and at free fall speed, or almost that. So we show on our website, in fact, this building next to, adjacent to, the an old building that's being destroyed by controlled demolition, and you cannot tell the difference between the two. So I encourage people to look at the website, which is ae911truth.org.
Richard, I have a question for you. This is Jeannie. If the official reason for the building coming down was fire, what would a building destroyed by fire look like in contrast to the symmetrical descend into your own footprint that this other Building 7 did?
Well, first of all, we don't have a precedent in the history of steel frame skyscrapers for the destruction of these buildings. The fires that have been in these buildings have only caused minor damage. In some cases, there's some warping of beams, but never the complete loss of the building. So we can only look at other types of buildings, like wood frame buildings that have been destroyed. We would expect large, gradual deformations in the perimeter structure with maybe some localized failures here and there, and then the building would begin to tip over or fall asymmetrically. The fire is an organic process. It burns the area of fuel that it has in about 20 minutes in any given area. That's all the fuel or paper and carpet and so forth that there is in an office building. So it can't burn the whole building all at once and take out those columns or beams. It just would never happen. So we have no means of understanding how to explain the behavior of this building short of pre-planted explosive charges.
So let me get this straight. This building, which obviously and evidentially did not have an airplane fly into it, apparently had fires that were supposedly started by the collapse and the damage to the two World Trade Centers. Is that how the fires even started there?
Yeah, presumably. That's the speculation of NIST, that some of the beams that flew very far laterally from the side of the towers landed on this building and did cause some damage. In fact, initially, the speculation was that it was those beams, that the building was basically crushed by those beams. But, of course, that's not the case. It stood fine. There's no major gashes as initially reported. For instance, they said that 25% of the south side of the building was scooped out. Of course, were that the case, we would have also expected the building to fall toward its injured side. Also, there was some speculation that some of the diesel fuel in this building, which was running the generators for the backup electrical systems, caused massive fires that killed the building.
You know, I like like many.
That was ruled out. Sorry, I need to say that was ruled out by officials themselves, because that fuel was limited to the fifth floor, and there was no fires coming from the fifth floor.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know, I, like many Americans, don't even remember seeing anything about this building on the news. You know, I like everybody else, I was glued to the television that day, and I don't remember seeing much reported about that.
And Richard, could you tell us and our listeners why this building was given the designation of WTC 7, World Trade Center 7? Just for clarity's sake, please.
Yeah. The building wasn't in the news after 9/11, and that's why I didn't know about it. I mean, this is the third worst structural failure in modern history. And most architects and engineers know nothing about it. It's a fascinating situation. It's called WTC 7 because it is on the property of the World Trade Center. It was the seventh building in that series, even though it doesn't have the architectural character of the other six buildings.
Interesting. And what is located in that space where this building 7, what is located there today?
Well, they have rebuilt that building. It's I think it's a little taller, or maybe it's not quite as tall. I can't remember. It was rebuilt very quickly, within a year or so. I don't know if it still has the same occupants that it had. The building housed the IRS, the CIA, the Department of Defense, the Securities and Exchange Commission, other three-letter agencies were in there. This is a cause for suspicion on some people's parts, that especially given that the fires were the worst in the 12th and 13th floor, which was occupied by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which lost thousands of files related to hundreds of cases that it was actively pursuing against Wall Street companies like Enron and WorldCom. And these fires on these floors were actually on the back side of the building, opposite the Twin Towers. So there's plenty of reason.
Wow, I had no idea about any of this. That's that gives cause for concern and makes one wonder.
Yeah, especially if these very powerful government agencies, IRS, CIA, SEC. Yeah, I mean, this is it sends red flags up, I think, for anybody that is willing to look at the truth. My goodness.
There are many other red flags. The officials find and document in the debris that is left at the bottom of this pile the only two pieces of steel that were saved from World Trade Center 7, or maybe one of three or four that were saved, they find and and document the steel as having been eroded by a hot sulfuric corrosion attack on the steel, with liquid molten iron invading steel itself, causing it to look like Swiss cheese, a thinning 3/4-inch thick plates of these I-beams to razor sharpness. And guess what? Fires don't do this to steel. And remember, no jet plane hit this building. There's no jet fuel in this building. And even if it did, the jet fuel could not do this to the steel. So fires and jet fuel are hydrocarbons. They only burn about 600 to 1200 degrees Fahrenheit. But in this, but this is evidence of up to 3200 degree temperatures, or at least 2800 degrees, twice that of what these office fires are capable of producing.
What was attributed to that variance in temperature? I mean, if the normal fires you said are 600 to 1200 degrees, and this would have had to have been a minimum of 2800 degrees. I mean, those are known facts. What was attributed to making these steel beams become liquid molten iron?
Well, the curious thing is that they don't attribute anything. They're just puzzled. The New York Times called this the greatest mystery of World Trade Center, in the World Trade Center itself. So we have later on some speculation, and among those are that the gypsum board, which contains calcium sulfate, somehow released its sulfuric content. Gypsum board is used to protect steel structures and has never turned around and attacked them. The calcium sulfate's an abundant ingredient. It can't, it's inert. It can't come out and attack. So that's one suspicion. The others are that the fires just grew hotter and hotter in the pile afterward, and somehow achieved temperatures exceeding what their fuel source was capable of. And that's against the laws of physics. That just doesn't happen. The second law of thermodynamics tells us that heat moves from hotter to cooler temperatures, not hotter to even hotter. There's no rational explanation for what happened to these beams, save a thermitic incendiary. Thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. It is combining a powder of iron oxide and aluminum powders, which are in about 75 to 25% ratio, which when ignited create massive amounts of molten iron as their byproduct. They can be used and harnessed in patented cutter charges to force liquid molten iron through steel. That's how the steel is cut with these devices. And this is normally not used in controlled demolitions. They normally use explosives because they are less expensive. So we have found by officials basically the evidence of thermite destruction in these buildings, and they're completely ignoring that fact or whitewashing it. So these reports are on that basis alone fraudulent. They're also fraudulent because they never seriously examined the hypothesis of explosive controlled demolition. I mean, these buildings high-rise buildings have never come down by fire, and they, when they have come down, it's almost always been by controlled demolition. And since the videos reveal that these buildings' destruction looks exactly like a controlled demolition, it should have been the first hypothesis to be considered, especially when fire has never brought one down. So we have evidence there of a bias on the part of the officials who are clearly not using the scientific method whatsoever in reaching the conclusions to their or to a valid set of hypotheses.
Well, let's that's just some amazing information about Building 7, but let's move on to the Twin Towers. So let's talk about what was the official story that most people think is true. Let's start there.
Yes, the planes that were hijacked were flown into each of these towers, producing a large explosion of jet fuel and fires on these in these buildings. And the South Tower begins its destruction about 56 minutes later. The North Tower slightly longer. So by 10 o'clock in the morning, the entire lower Manhattan is filled with dust when these two towers are destroyed. And the official story tells us that the towers did their job withholding the impact of the airplanes, but that the fires caused structural weakening of the steel and a gravitational collapse all the way down to the ground. So we have architects and engineers have never seen the destruction of a high-rise short of controlled demolition. And this was a very different behavior in these buildings than World Trade Center 7, which was a classic implosion. These towers were very explosive in their behavior, with mushroom clouds and hurling lateral debris in all directions well outside the perimeter of the buildings. So we, myself included, 10 years ago, did not have a frame of reference to judge what we were being told almost immediately by the experts, which was, oh, yeah, this is a gravitational collapse. Sometimes they use the word pancaking. This can happen in these buildings. So it received a remarkably low level of scrutiny among architects and engineers and others, because we're all in a state of shock that morning, having been told there's up to four planes flying around the skies attacking us. This is, had to be similar to the shock of Pearl Harbor, which started World War II. So we're looking for answers, and we're willing to accept those answers in this state of shock and cognitive dissonance, where what's happening in the world doesn't relate to our internal set of how things should be. We're much more receptive to whatever answers we're given. And this was proven when we were told what I just mentioned about these buildings, in contradiction to the evidence that we were seeing on TV, which was that there are, in fact, 4-ton perimeter wall units ejected laterally up to 600 feet away from these buildings at 70 miles an hour. Many of these are clocked at by physicists. And so that behavior alone, the outward ejection of these heavy structural steel pieces, free-flying pieces, is in direct contradiction to the way a gravitational collapse happens. Gravity works downward, not outward. But there, these pieces are trailing thick plumes of pyroclastic-like dust clouds, smoke clouds. It's rather extraordinary. It looks very similar to a series of explosions, which we compare it to on our website. In fact, it looks almost exactly like the eruption of a volcano, which we also compare it to. But in the beginning of the collapse of World Trade Center 1, we have the sudden destruction of this building. The plane hits 15 stories down from the top of the building. The explosions start a couple of stories above the plane, not at the point of the worst fires. And like the firemen describe in the oral histories that were recorded in October of 500 firefighters, at least 118 of them are talking about sounds of explosions and flashes of light at the onset of the destruction of both of these buildings. And yet none of these oral recordings or any of the other witness accounts of explosions appear in any of the official reports that have been released by NIST, by FEMA, by the 9/11 Commission. None of them. And there's hundreds of reports of these explosions. They're all, many of them, are in our DVD.
Now you said these explosions occurred actually several stories above where the plane went in. Would there be any possibility that the jet fuel could have contributed to these explosions?
Well, not according to the official story or our belief, the jet fuel was, the explosions occurred at impact. There weren't other explosions attributed to the jet fuel, by officials. What they say is that the jet fuel burned up within 10 minutes, leaving only office contents. And that's natural. You would expect any accelerant like that that was starting a fire to be consumed itself quite rapidly, like lighter fluid in a charcoal barbecue, for instance. The lighter fluid is burned up pretty quick and transfers its heat, its energy, over to the charcoal. So no, what they do is deny the explosions altogether.
Oh, really? Unilateral denial of the explosions, even though it's showing it on the videos and you've got oral reports from the first responders and firefighters? They're denying it?
Correct. And they deny the obvious explosions that occur below the collapsing building. We'll call it the zone of destruction that's traveling down at a remarkably quick pace. But 20 to 40, 60, or 60 stories even, down below that you have these highly focused pinpoint-like ejections of dust and smoke and building materials that are accelerating very rapidly. Well, they're 200, up to 200 feet per second is the speed at which these are shot out of the building, and these various dozens of what can be called squibs in the explosives industry. They're obviously propelled by explosives given the speed that they occur out of the building. So that's another example or piece of evidence for explosions in these buildings. But in addition to that, this top 15-story section in the North Tower above the point of jet plane impacts begins suddenly to collapse in on itself and fairly symmetrically straight down, just like Building 7 did. So in the first 4 seconds, the North Tower, and in the case of the South Tower, the first maybe 5 seconds, These buildings are dropping almost at free fall acceleration in the exact manner of a classic controlled demolition. But wait, we're told that that upper block was what drove the rest of the building down to the ground, and yet it's being destroyed itself in the first 4 seconds. So there was nothing left, in fact, and this is exactly what the videos show, to destroy the rest of the building. What's happening to the rest of the building is it's tearing itself apart, hurling these massive amounts of structure and all their other building contents laterally, and that zone of destruction travels down the building at 2/3 of freefall acceleration. In other words, very close to freefall acceleration. These buildings are both destroyed in about a dozen seconds.
Wow, that is just absolutely amazing. Well, on that note, Richard, we are going to take a break to listen to our sponsors. Without them, we could not do these great shows that we do. So we will be back in just a moment. This is Carol again, and I just wanted to talk to you about one of our new sponsors, Hole in the Wall Herb and Vitamin Shop up in Woodland Park. The owners, Mark and Nancy Duvall, are not only close personal friends, but they're also my nutritional gurus. They are now selling, teaching, and doing Acira bioenergetic testing on their clients. I had this done, and I found out all my food allergies, emotional stressors, environmental sensitivities, hormonal balance, and I received a customized homeopathic remedy. Please call them for more information at 1-800-437-3240.
My name is Jennifer, and I'm a health fanatic. I admit it. I read all the labels, eat organic food, and I'm very aware of what I put into my body. I practice holistic health, use alternative healing products, and never miss my daily dose of Willard Water. Willard Water is made with fossilized organics and contains nearly 24 trace minerals that are essential to maintaining strong bones, heart health, and good energy. Simply adding a quarter capful of Willard Water to my tea makes a tremendous impact on my overall well-being. Willard Water is tasteless and odorless. Dr. Willard's patented catalyst helps our bodies better absorb the minerals and nutrients we need to maintain optimal health. If you care about your health, you'll try Willard Water today.
To learn more about the benefits of Willard Water, call us at 888-379-4552 or visit our website at drwillard.com. That's drwillard.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and Willard Water is not intended to treat, diagnose, cure, or prevent any diseases.
Hi, I'm Carol Gravet, and I'm one of the hosts of Food Integrity Now. And I've just teamed up with Sharon Farrell of Rocky Mountain Sacred Journeys. And we'd like you to come join us on an amazing adventure of fun and self-discovery. Please join us for one of our ongoing trips to Hawaii to swim with the dolphins in the wild. To find out more about our ongoing trips, please go to wilddolphinswimadventures.com or call us at 415-302-7100. Welcome back to Food Integrity Now. We're speaking with Richard Gage, and he's talking about the evidence that architects and engineers have amassed and accumulated regarding what really happened, according to this group of people, on 9/11. So, Richard, you want to carry on with what you were talking about with the Twin Towers and what evidence you have presented?
Yes, it is rather extraordinary how explosive the towers were. One could speculate why that would be the case. Why wouldn't they bring the whoever they are, right? We don't have answers to those questions. but why would they blow up the towers and make it so obvious, at least to those who were aware of these early on, and many, I mean millions of Americans were aware of exactly what was going on in front of their eyes and weren't fooled by the experts like I was, unfortunately, and most architects and engineers were. The perhaps they didn't have access to plant these charges in the perimeter columns, maybe just the core columns where the elevators were. Through the elevator shafts, one would have direct access to all the core columns and the beams necessary to plant those charges right there. But they might have had to have been of such force as to blow out the perimeter wall units, which are composed of 30-foot high section of three columns and three spandrel panels, which were then in turn bolted to each other. So those bolts could be broken with a certain force applied against them. So perhaps that force was necessary to be developed in the core of the building, or the charges in the core of the building. And they were having to deal with the results of an obvious explosive demolition, which we haven't seen.
So let me understand what you're saying is you are thinking that this was done from inside and perhaps through the elevator shafts? Is that what you're saying? So I guess who would have access to that to be able to do that? I mean, what type of security did this building have?
Well, these are among the more highly secure buildings outside the Pentagon because they were obviously terrorist targets. So we certainly want an investigation that includes the security companies. As far as access inside the building, we do have the largest elevator modernization in history going on. This is done by Ace Elevator, and they had access the 9 months prior to 9/11 to all the elevators shafts in turn. So this could have given cover to a more sinister operation, and we certainly want Ace Elevator included in any investigation. They had 85 employees in the buildings at the time of the first hit, and they fled. They did not stick around to help the firefighters. This was actually quite a scandal documented by USA Today in October of 2001.
So none of the ACE Elevator's employees were hurt or injured or anything during this disaster?
That's a good question. I don't have the answer to it. That may have been discussed in the in that news article. I'll have to review that again. That's a good question.
Yeah, because it can be argued that somebody that maintains an elevator does not have the same level of commitment to assist others as do firefighters, policemen, etc. But you would think at least someone, when there's that level of problem, would have stayed to make sure, to try to get the elevators to operate in order to evacuate the largest number of people. So just again to recap, you're saying, because this is tough to take in, Richard, and I absolutely agree. It is, after most of us were mesmerized and just shocked with the repeated viewings of the planes hitting the towers and then the towers crashing, and the level of trauma that occurred that occurred in people because of this repeated viewing, it does make it a little harder to even not just to examine, but to believe an alternative motive. So your evidence, and you're basing your evidence on standard scientific analysis and practices, state that these explosive charges were placed in the elevator, in the core of the building, and that's what caused these lateral projections of debris and beams, etc., that if it just it didn't implode, it exploded, is what you're saying. Is that correct?
Yes. It was a very explosive event. We would expect to find in a gravitational collapse a stack of floors, 110 of them, at the bottom. Each of these floors were an acre in size. Each was composed of 4 to 12 inch thick concrete floor slabs. We're talking about 90,000 tons of concrete that was pulverized to a fine powder that laid throughout Manhattan, a 3-square-mile area, a blanket of 4 to 12 inches thick. This powder was pulverized to 100 microns. It's like talcum powder. And it's absolutely extraordinary what kind of explosives and must have been used, and how they were set. You know, it raises all kinds of questions like that. But there's no floors seen in the photographs of the debris pile. There's only a 2-story pile of debris at the bottom of either of these buildings, core columns, perimeter columns. Where are the stack of floors? Where is the 220 acres of metal decking that's used in the formation of these floors? They pour the concrete into it. This is extraordinary. All of it is actually missing. And in fact, I myself found metal filings in the World Trade Center dust sample that I put a magnet to, and I couldn't figure out, well, where are these? What are these metal filings? Well, it turns out there's also 10,000 metal file cabinets that are missing that should have been found trapped between these floors, stacked at 20, 30 stories high at the bottom of a gravitational collapse. But we don't find them either, nor do we find 24 electrical substations, which are completely missing.
Well, that brings me to the next question. So what type of investigation has been done, and what do you think needs to be done?
Well, I can tell you that a team of independent scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen has done an investigation with Stephen Jones, Kevin Ryan, and others, and produced a peer-reviewed paper of their findings of what they found in the dust. And it's startling. They find in all four samples, independently collected, some on top of a skyscraper 3 blocks away from World Trade Center 7, one, and some collected on the railing of the on-ramp to the Brooklyn Bridge. And these findings contain... the dust contains small red-gray chips, red on one side, gray on the other. The red side, in turn, of these very small chips, about a 16th of an inch long, most of them are, they find particles of iron oxide and aluminum powder. Remember those? They're the ingredients of thermite. But these particles are so small, they're 1,000 times smaller than the diameter of human hair. These are at the nanoscale. So this is called nanothermite. We know about it because it was documented before 2001 by Los Alamos Labs and Lawrence Livermore Lab. These particles are intermixed very, very intimately, and they are in the perfect proportion, as we described earlier, to make up thermite. So this is, and they're set, by the way, in an organic bed of oxygen, silica, and carbon. This is a very particular mixture that has been documented, and it can't be created by falling rust from the sky and a gravitational collapse and mixing with aluminum powder. Iron oxide is basically rust. So we know that these chips are not some haphazard creation from the collapsed. We also know that because when you put these chips into a differential scanning calorimeter, which is basically just a heater, they blow up at about, let's call it an ignition, at about 420 degrees centigrade, 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And when they blow up, they release thousands of what? Tiny iron microspheres, molten iron microspheres. Spheres because surface tension of a liquid when it's atomized by a force produces spheres. That's what raindrops are, for instance. They're actually spheres. Now, these spheres have the exact same chemical makeup of the previously molten iron microspheres documented in all the World Trade Center dust samples by official sources like USGS and R.J. Lee, environmental consulting firm. In fact, they say these spheres are so ubiquitous throughout the World Trade Center dust as it becomes a signature element of the dust. In other words, it's not World Trade Center dust unless it has these spheres in it, which they can't explain, by the way, how such spheres could have gotten in all the World Trade Center dust. They call it evidence of extremely high temperatures. They say that they were formed during the event, but they don't explain in the official reports what they are or where they came from. So this team of international scientists is able to quite clearly, in this peer-reviewed paper in the Bentham Open Chemical Physics Journal, document where these spheres came from, these red-gray chips of nanothermite incendiaries. This material should not be there. It is made only in the most sophisticated defense contracting laboratories.
Wow. So, Richard, what is the government's response to your wealth of evidence and your allegations?
They call them conspiracy theories.
They call your evidence conspiracy theories. Interesting.
Yes.
Hardcore evidence that you have substantiated has been called conspiracy.
Yes. That's the way to degrade a set of evidence that is not in sync with the story that you've told.
Right, and it creates ridicule. And
yes, but yes. It sounds like you have followed the standard scientific principles and pathways by having your evidence documented, having it done by an independent panel, having it peer-reviewed. This is evidence that's going to be difficult to refute. Where are you in your efforts to get a second investigation initiated? Or what is your next step with all of this?
Well, for 6 years, we've been presenting this information to the public, and it is a slow learning process. When we do present to audiences, of which are 100 to 700 typically, and we always take a show of hands beforehand and after, and how many of you agree with the official story or unsure or already agree with the evidence. For those who are unsure or already believing the official story, we turn around 85 to 100% of them. It is really rather extraordinary how overwhelmingly clear this evidence is to most people when they sit in front of it and then have to respond. Yet it is it has been censored by the media, largely. We were on Geraldo with a fairly a reasonable, unbiased effort on his part to look at the destruction of Building 7. We had our engineer and family member on who were calling for a new investigation, along with the rest of us, on that show. So we've gotten some minor breakthroughs like this, but it has been very difficult. We've presented the DVD personally to offices of 36 congressmen and senators, and we have given the DVD to all the rest of them by hand in every office. So they have all been apprised of this information. There's been surprisingly little response on their parts.
So with this wealth of information that appears to be ignored, let's ask the question, who would benefit from this happening and why?
Well, these are the classic questions that should be asked by criminal investigators. This is a crime scene. And by the way, the evidence in a crime scene is supposed to be sacrosanct. You do not mess with it. And yet 99% of the steel from these buildings, which contains the evidence of what brought them down, was destroyed illegally, sent to China for recycling very early on in the cleanup. So that is another crime that needs to be investigated.
I did not know about that. We hadn't heard that at all. So the actual evidence that could give even more proof to the proof that you have was sent to China for recycling.
Yeah.
It's not like we couldn't recycle it here ourselves. Interesting.
Very interesting. Well, it becomes less. They pay a greater price than we could. Local companies, I guess, could. Here, recycling companies. You know, the labor is very cheap in China, so they have more profit for it over there, I guess. But yeah, it's total illegal destruction of evidence. And in fact, the editor in chief of Fire Engineering magazine, Bill Manning, cries out against this outrage of the destruction of this evidence, and he says the illegal destruction of evidence. The steel must stop immediately, and he's calling for an investigation of that process himself.
So, Richard, what do you suggest that our listeners do with this information?
Well, what we need is action. this is a grassroots movement. The 9/11 truth movement is growing by millions every year. It is not going away by any means. It's a reality that has to be dealt with. What we're asking people to do is to inform themselves. People can watch the DVD on our website or purchase it from our store. They can read most of the evidence on our website for free.
Can you give that website again so our listeners can have that?
Yeah. It's AE911truth.org, and it stands for Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, AE911truth.org. And once informed, then share the link that I just gave you with all of your friends and family and associates, colleagues, and especially every architect and engineer that you can find, because that's how this word is spreading. The truth of what brought 9/11 down will bring justice to the victims of 9/11, will eventually put the perpetrators in jail. We don't know This is obviously some sort of conspiracy. We don't know how high or wide it goes. It would take tremendous coordination among hundreds of individuals to pull off such a thing. And obviously, it's not just the Twin Towers that were blown up. There's evidence at the Pentagon, which requires a new investigation. There's evidence in the fourth plane at Shanksville that went down that needs an investigation. There's the behavior of the Air Force, which needs an investigation, where our fighter jets were sent north and south, far away from anywhere, but on the day of 9/11, allowing these planes to be unmolested for an hour and a half, even after when we knew the country was under attack. The one plane was still on its way for an hour to the Pentagon. So we have plenty of reason for investigation.
Richard, what you're proposing, and it appears to be backed by quite a mass of evidence, it can't be popular with some officials. Have you received responses from them? Have you received death threats or anything like that? Any threats to your personal well-being for bringing this information forward?
No, I haven't. I haven't had threats. I've only had names be hurled. So I'm very grateful for that. I don't need that in my life. I've given up enough just to my career and so forth to work full time on this project.
Now I did.
We have a.
I'm sorry, I was going to say, I did check your website, and it talks about you're putting together a documentary of all of this. In the time we have remaining, could you talk to us about that, please?
Sure. We have interviewed 50 of our 1,600 petition signers, and these are experts in their fields, PhDs, high-rise architects, structural engineers, chemical engineers, physicists, and controlled demolition experts. We have them assembled, and they are giving out the evidence. So it's not just myself in the 9/11 Blueprint for Truth DVD that we've been using successfully for the last 5 years. It's been the mainstay, but now we have a really well-crafted set of experts giving out all of this evidence with accompanying video and photos. So that will be ready very soon, within 3 weeks. So I hope everybody will look for that. In the meantime, the mainstay that we have, our landmark DVD, 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, is available. The new one will be called 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out.
Well, we'll look forward to reviewing that when it comes out. And one thing I wanted to mention is what I've been thinking about for the last little bit is what really has changed since 9/11. And when I think about that, you know, you look at the Patriot Act and how many of our freedoms have been taken away since 9/11 that many Americans aren't even aware of. So that's something I think that people can, if they want to do their own exploration and research, which we always encourage people to do on this show, we present information and then we really suggest that our listeners go out and do their own research and find out for themselves. Don't take our word for it, but do your own research.
Yes, and adding to that, in addition to looking how both Patriot Act 1 and 2 have significantly reduced our freedoms. Also look at the National Defense Authorization Act, which just recently got passed. And it seems under the guise of protecting us from terrorists, many of our personal freedoms seem to be vanishing. And that's something we always encourage our listeners to investigate on their own and take action.
Yes, any of us can be put into jail simply by being called a terrorist by some governmental official without a right to a trial and indefinitely.
Yes.
This is absolutely extraordinary loss of our guaranteed liberties in this
exactly
country. And that's on our list of shows coming up to have a show dedicated to that.
So we're looking forward to that. Well, thank you, Richard, for being on our show today. You presented us with much information and evidence. And again, we invite our listeners to visit your website. That's ae911truth.org and do your own research. So thank you again for doing what you do and presenting all this information on our show.
Yes, and thank you for your courage that it takes to do this as well.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you, Jeannie and Carol, for your work in getting this out to the listeners. It's a very important service.
Well, we love doing it and we'll continue to do it. So you have been listening to Food Integrity Now. And if you have show ideas, comments, or just want to say hi, you can email us at info@foodintegritynow.org. We'd really love to hear from you. Check us out on the web at foodintegritynow.org, where you can find shows archived and news articles. Look us up on Facebook and subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes by searching for Food Integrity Now. New shows come out every Thursday. This is Carol Gravey and Jeannie Smith wishing you a happy and healthy week. Until next week, stay educated and stay active. Thank you.